Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa is here screening your calls. The lines are starting to fill up. And the last couple shows, we have filled the line. So if you're listening online and you want to join us on the call, you might want to pick up the phone and do it right now. The number to dial, 347-884-8327. That number will get you on the call. 347-884-8327. Once you're on the call, press 1. Lisa will screen your call if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it will be, and we will get to those here coming up soon. I know I say it every night, but every night in the last 15 or 20 minutes, we see a lot of questions, and I have to end the show without being able to get to them all. Last night, the questions came in early, but we had a lot of them. So if you have a question, get it in early so we can see what we've got. Press 1 on your phone. Lisa will screen that, and we'll get to it in a bit. With me tonight is Tom Light, an engineer from Evans Cooling. We're going to be talking about that product. If you have any questions about it whatsoever, jump in now. Get in line. And before we get to that, I'm going to do a quick rundown of the Transforecast letter, what's going on in the market demand index. And then we'll get to Tom, and we'll start getting right to your calls. Again, the number to join us, 347-884-8327. Press 1 with a question, a comment, or a topic. The market demand index has leveled off, I think, and it kind of stopped its free fall. We've had four weeks in a row now where it's kind of leveled off in this low 7 range, which is a good place for it to kind of settle in. And I would expect that we'll probably stay here for the rest of August, and then we may start to see some demand pick up in September, which would be good. This was a good place. Just to give you a history of this, back in January of this year, the index was down in the 4s. It started a really big run up. It was up a couple months straight, actually almost 4 months straight. It was up every week. We peaked in the mid-12s. That's when everybody was just kind of running crazy and there was freight everywhere. We bounced around up in the 12s, 11, 10 range through May and June. And July, we started a pretty steep free fall. But again, as bad as the freight looked during those weeks, it only looked that way comparing it to the weeks before. If we went back and compared it to this time last year, we're still up about 120% over freight volumes last year. And 7 is a pretty important number. 7 is that place where we still have negotiation power. There's still enough freight volume compared to the available trucks that we've got some negotiation power, and it looks like we've leveled off. Last week it was at 7.19. This week it's at 7.27, so actually up a little bit. So that looks good. Load availability was up 1% for the week, and truck availability was down 3%. And equipment rates were down, not a whole lot. The average equipment rate down to $1.87. It was $1.88 the week before. Van rates were down 2% to $1.66. They were $1.69 the previous week. Flatbed rates down 2% to $1.71. They were at $1.75. Reefer rates were the same at $1.99. And specialized rates were down 0.5% to $2.12. Fuel prices are up $2.98 for the week. That's up 7 cents from the week before. They were $2.91. They've been fairly stable. Looks like we might be on another upswing with fuel prices. So overall, for kind of the summer doldrums, it's not looking too bad. It looks like we got a nice turn on freight here, and that may look good going into September. If you have any questions about that, you can certainly jump in and ask those. And let's see, looking at the lines again, they're starting to fill up. Here's the number if you're listening online and you want to join us on the call, 347-884-8327. And let's get to the topic for the night, Evans Coolit. And with me is Tom Light. Tom, welcome to the program.
Nice to be here, Kevin. Looking forward to taking questions from your listeners and answering whatever they might have on their minds.
Well, do you want to answer some questions from me first?
Sure.
Why don't we do this? We, you know, Evans Coolant is a product I started looking at over a year ago. I started talking to my listeners, telling them I was looking at it, letting them know why I was interested, and we, you know, came back and revisited a couple times, and then, of course, once we contacted you, I started giving them more information. But why don't you give us kind of a history of the company and the product, and not just in the trucking industry. Why don't you give us the history of how it came about and how long you've been working on it and other areas where it's being used, and then we can kind of move into the trucking industry.
Well, the heritage of Evans Cooling Systems is in the high performance and racing area. Jack Evans, the inventor of most of our products, was involved with his own race car, high performance vehicles. And he was of the belief that the engine cooling situation was a drawback, was a very limiting factor in what you could do with compression ratios and so on, that he would like to run to give him more power, give him an advantage in the racing. He worked on a number of early cooling systems he had a system that was presented to him to look at. An executor of an estate of a gentleman with patents on boiling liquid cooling systems asked Jack to look into the patents, see if there was any value there. These systems had no moving parts. The Barlow patents, the ones he was looking at, had water-based coolant in them and very large condensers, because basically you were boiling water, making water vapor, and then recondensing that vapor. and returning liquid back to the cooling system. And the research that Mr. Evans was involved with, and I assisted him. I've been a business partner of his for over 25 years, but we began to look at other substances that might be more interesting in a situation where you're making vapor and having to condense everything to retain coolant in the system. We were trying to have systems without moving parts, and we realized that trying to condense water vapor was a tough situation because you needed such a large area for condensing in order to return the vapor to its liquid state. We began looking at coolants that had higher boiling points. At first, we tried to make mixtures with water to get higher boiling points, but then we realized that once the liquid boils, you're stuck with water vapor to condense. And as long as you're making water vapor, you're stuck with the problem of large condensers and fairly low temperatures, or it won't work. The ambient temperatures have to be low enough. The condenser has to be big enough, and so on. So finally, we got into coolants that did not contain water, and we looked at a large number of them. And at that time, we settled on non-aqueous propylene glycol as being a very promising candidate. Well, and that was true. We could build a boiling liquid cooling system using propylene glycol. Our systems were running at 380 degrees Fahrenheit or so, and we had no problem at all condensing the vapor. But we kind of stepped back from that and said, okay, well, now let's be more reasonable. Let's go back to some moving parts. We'll start pumping this, and we'll use small radiators, and let's see where we go with that. We had a system that we called the hybrid cooling system, where we were doing some condensing and some action with radiators. But, you know, finally we came out of that and said, well, look, what we really have is we're in the right direction here. We're getting away from having to condense water vapor, and then that's the big deal. So let's go back to a circulating liquid cooling system, and let's see what we can do with evolutionary higher temperatures rather than these sky-high temperatures we were looking at, somewhat higher temperatures, and with a waterless coolant, we can downsize things. We can allow the temperature to run hotter because we will not be making water vapor in the cooling jacket that is going to insulate the hot metal, the hot metal in the cylinder head from the liquid coolant. We will maintain the heat transfer, but we will do this in a circulating liquid cooling system with a radiator, and there are all kinds of advantages when we do that. We can run a downsized radiator. We can run the engine a little bit warmer than it used to run. We can pick up fuel economy advantages that way. And there may be other aspects of getting rid of the water that are very favorable. So this is the work that was done quite a few years ago. We were in the cooling systems business rather than the coolant business at that time, and we were heavily promoting what we called reverse flow cooling systems, and that's where the coolant is introduced to the cylinder head first, where most of the heat is generated. We thought everybody would want to do that. but it really turned out that there wasn't much interest in changing hardware. when we pumped coolant into the cylinder head first, it went around. There was a Chevrolet engine that used that technology, not with waterless coolant, but there wasn't much other activity or interest in the reverse flow situation. So we really migrated into conventional flow cooling systems, which were much more practical for us because that's what everybody had, and we were doing conversions with them. And with the propylene glycol, we had been working with major chemical companies. They made fully formulated coolants for the propylene glycol. There were some things that we did not like about the formulations. Probably 15 years ago, we got into studying the coolants themselves more closely, and Evans Cooling Systems actually developed blends of glycols and particular additives that work, that do not require water to dissolve the additive or to otherwise enable the additive to function. So it was research by Evans Cooling under the direction of Jack Evans, where we came up with the more recent coolants that are in the current product line. Now, our business has been the people who have been attracted to using our coolants and our ideas have generally been people faced with the very worst kind of cooling situations. And, you know, I can mention various examples. We had Evans has a business in China. We had the case of trucks, construction equipment running at 16,000 feet, where the air pressure is very low. And not only that, the air is thin, so your radiator doesn't work as well. And they could only run their trucks with half loads, and they would have to stop and let them cool down and so on. And our people in China showed them that with the Evans waterless coolant that they could run an ordinary production schedule. The trucks didn't overheat, and they could fully load the equipment. Then we've solved particular problems. We had a first sergeant at Balad Air Force Base in Iraq. He was faced with the problem of keeping his machine shops running during the hottest part of the day. The ambient temperature might be 130°F, and he had generators out on the tarmac where he was measuring ambient temperatures of 140 Fahrenheit. His generators were unreliable because the high temperature switches would shut these machines down. They would lose their welding capability, the air conditioning, the lights, and so on. And it was really messing them up where they were trying to repair aircraft coming in from the war zone in Iraq. And with Evans Coolant and some help, some technical help from Connecticut, they got those generators to be reliable, around the clock, no matter how hot it was, how hot the ambient temperature went, they would do the job. We now are trying to, we have recently, the last couple of years, jumped in with both feet into the heavy-duty engine area. We feel that, that's an area where we can make a substantial contribution, that we have the ability to sell a product that is useful and will pay for itself in a fairly short period of time by delivering fuel economy that everybody wants. And ever since diesel went to $5 a gallon a couple of years ago, the price of fuel has been in the back of everybody's mind, and fuel economy has become so important. So we are really focusing on the heavy-duty engine area as never before. But your question was, where did we come from? What was our heritage?
It was in
the high-performance automobiles, the race cars, and that sort of thing.
And then from there, it sounds like you have been solving extreme cases where the traditional methods just weren't working, period. Where, you know, we're in an industry where, you know, we kind of get along with the technology that's there, but we're really kind of pushing the limits, and it's a compromise, and it's not the best situation when it comes to cooling, but, you know, we're able to get by. And as we get into EGR engines and returning so much heat to the engine, that problem's getting a little worse. My interest was, of course, in the beginning, the fuel economy. But the product fits what we do in a couple of different ways. And one of them is that it has multiple benefits. It's not just the fuel economy. There are other benefits. It's a better coolant. It's protecting the engine better. We don't see cavitation and some of the other problems that we see with traditional coolants. And another thing, a lot of the products we've introduced over the years on the show and even before I had the show, they really require people to change the way they think about something. And this is another product like that. It's a lot of people look at it and they have a preconceived notion about something and they need to change the way they think about it. If, for example, you know, 15 years ago, I started exploring, you know, bypass oil filtration. And still to this day, there are some people who look at that and say, well, that's insane. You can't just keep running your oil. You can't just leave it in an engine. Well, we can as long as we can keep it clean enough. And we had to change the way people thought about that. Many products that we use, that it requires that change of thinking. This is another one. For so many years, we've been conditioned that you have to keep an engine cool. I mean, that was almost the goal, to keep it cool. And when I started studying diesel technology and engines and what I knew of them, I thought, why are we trying so hard to keep this engine cool when they run more efficiently when they run hot? But the reason was everybody was afraid to run them hot because of failures. But it wasn't the engine that was failing. It was the coolant that was failing.
Yes, that's right. We have 100 years of watching engines be unhappy beyond a certain temperature. However, it's really confined to the liquid-cooled engines. We have what is called the air-cooled engine that has been happily running at higher temperatures than liquid-cooled engines, forever. And the fact is that with an air-cooled engine, a path is maintained to conduct heat out of the hot place in the cylinder head out to where the fins are, and that path is maintained. With a liquid cooling system, when you boil in the jacket, and if you can't get rid of that vapor, if you can't condense that vapor, you have an insulating barrier between a place where you're making a lot of heat and where the coolant is, where you're trying to dissipate the heat. The coincidence that everybody kind of misses is that Gee whiz, the engines don't—they seem to go berserk at a certain temperature, and we don't want to go there. And that temperature is exactly where the coolant is boiling. So the rule of thumb, you know, the experience, the conventional wisdom is you can't go above a certain temperature. Because the engine will fail, the engine can't take it. But you're right. What it is the coolant is changing state. It's not the same coolant that you have at lower temperatures. So what we have today, we have massive cooling systems. We have very large radiators. We have radiator fans that draw a great deal of horsepower when they turn on. And the reason why they have to have that is to keep the water-based coolant functional in the system. If it didn't change state, they run pressure so they can run a little bit warmer, but they really are running very close to the boiling point of the coolant most of the time, and. There are a lot of problems involved in doing that. One is the pressure itself and the stress on plumbing in your system. And then, of course, you have cavitation issues where you have a vibration going on at the same time you're operating the coolant near its boiling point. You get vaporization and collapse of that vapor at the frequency of the vibration. So a cylinder liner that's being vibrated at the frequency of the piston going up and down in that environment will likely scrub the surface and start making pits into the cylinder liner, and voila, you have a problem. So when we get away from crowding the boiling point, we like to say this: we separate the operating temperature of the coolant from its boiling point. Now, everybody else thinks they're doing that with their water-based coolant and so on, their cooling systems. But you know, we really do it. Our boiling point is so much hotter than where the operating temperature is that. You know, if there's any vapor forming anywhere, it immediately collapses into the surrounding liquid. It just does not last, and so it's quite a different animal. And you're right, you have to drop your preconceived thinking and say, well, how come we can't run warmer? Well, you can. That's the short answer.
Yeah, it's the same way. Like I use the example of you know, extended drains going 200,000 miles on oil. We can do it. We just have to change the way we do things. We have to change the way we think. We have to keep it clean. Here, we can run these kind of temperatures. The engine will do just fine if we have a coolant that can handle it. And you said the other coolants, you know, believe that they're overcoming that problem, but they're so close. They're pushing the limits of the coolant so often that what we see is that coolant works okay under ideal conditions. But anything beyond that, we start to see problems, or we see problems over time. And we see, I get calls a lot now as a truck gets some miles on it. Somebody will say, my truck seems to overheat more than it used to. If I'm on a long pull, my fan runs the whole time, my check engine light comes on, my overheat light comes on, what's wrong? And many times what we find is there isn't any one thing that we can point to and fix. It seems to be an overall deterioration of the system. The radiator isn't its cooling as good as it used to. And it's just a lot of things that we were so close to the failure point before that any time we stress that system, we start to see problems. And like you said, you've gone so far past that point that that's just no longer a concern. We're not anywhere near the point of the coolant having a problem.
Yeah, that's right. With the water-based coolant, there really is not much leeway for anything to enter in. You know, things like dirt on the radiator, or maybe some additive coating of surfaces, either in the engine or on the radiator, inside the radiator. You're crowding the limit, the envelope of what that coolant is capable of, and that's where you are. You don't have the ability to let it go much warmer without getting into boiling and other problems.
So then, we have this coolant that is so much better. We've given ourselves all of this headroom now. We have lots of room to, we're no longer stressing it. We don't have to worry about it. We don't have that weak component in there anymore, which was the water. And I was interested again because I'm always looking for that next thing on fuel economy. And it made sense to me. I did know that if we can run a diesel engine hotter, they'll run more efficiently. That was what I saw as benefit number one, is the engine's going to run warmer, it's going to run more efficiently, and yet it's still better protected at those temperatures than most of our engines are today at cooler temperatures. We run more risk of damage at lower temperatures with our current coolants. Now we can go warmer, more efficient, better protection. And then the second advantage was, if we don't have to bring that fan in, which draws 40 and 50 horsepower depending on the engine, that's a huge draw on that engine, which not only hurts fuel economy, and it hurts performance when we need it most. When we're on that long pull and the engine's getting hot, or we're really putting a demand on the engine, now we need to kick in this fan, which draws all kinds of horsepower. So it really made sense to me when I first started looking at it. But I'm a little cautious. I need to change my thinking because I've been conditioned just like everybody else. So we've been watching it, and I would go back to it, and I would read, and I would try to find people who were using it, and it is fairly new in this segment in the trucking industry. And finally, I just said, you know what, I can't find any reason not to do this. And that's one of the things I try to do. A lot of times when we look at a new product, we're exposed to all the reasons why we should use it. I mean, that's kind of marketing. That's what we have to do to get people interested. I always try to turn around and say, okay, I'm going to find some reason not to use this. And I really couldn't find any reason not to use this product. In a diesel engine, it just really makes sense.
Well, you're a pioneer. You're a careful pioneer. I'm glad that you have put it into some of your trucks and are getting a good result from it. What we want to do is to save people money so that they're happy to buy our product and get a quick payback, and from there on, they're in the black as they never were before.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to talk more about the fan and how come we don't run the fan as much when we raise the temperature. When we raise the fan on temperature, we allow the temperature of the radiator to get warmer. So when the fan does come on, you have a greater difference in temperature between the radiator and the ambient air. So you have better heat transfer out of the radiator when that fan turns on. And therefore, the fan doesn't have to run as long because it can dissipate the heat more efficiently than it could before when the radiator was at a lower temperature.
You know, of all the concepts, I just want to jump in there because of all the concepts that I read while I was researching this, that's the one I have the hardest time getting my head around. I know there's a concept in there that I'm not understanding, and I read that and I reread it and I thought, oh, why am I not getting this? And I still really don't. I mean, I know that it happens, but I don't understand why. The radiator becomes more efficient as it gets hotter.
Well, think of it this way. Let's say the air temperature is 100, and if you are if your radiator is at 200, you have a difference in the temperature of 100 degrees. If your radiator is at 230, the difference between the 230 and the air temperature is now 130 degrees. So your delta T, what we call it, the difference in temperature, is 130 versus 100. Okay, well that's a 30% increase in your delta T. Your ability to move the heat from the radiator to the ambient air is very dependent on that delta T. And if you can increase the delta T, it is far easier to move heat out of the radiator. And the fan simply does not have to run as long to remove the same amount of heat.
Okay, I believe it. I that was the one concept that I had the hardest time with. I still have a little bit of trouble. That makes a little more sense now that I understand it's the difference in temperature that we're really looking at.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, between the ambient air and the metal in the radiator. Yeah. That's the delta T, the difference in temperature that. Gives you a different efficiency. If you have a greater delta T, it's easier to move heat than if
okay.
you have a smaller delta T.
Okay. So that made sense to me. I knew if the fan didn't come on till a higher temperature, that would decrease our fan time. And then I was trying to get my head around once it did come on, because it was more efficient, it would go off sooner. Again, reducing the fan on time, which reduces drag on the engine, so we have better performance, better fuel economy, which that all made sense to me, and that's what we were shooting for. And I did see good results. I was very surprised because some of my operation's a little different. You know, we don't put a big demand on the engine like we do in some operations. We're not pulling a lot of weight. We have really no climbs. Our fans, they weren't running a lot anyway, so I wasn't really sure. There are some things that I have tried that may work better in other operations than they did in mine, but we track our fuel mileage, you know, the listeners know, every tank, dedicated run, same truck, same drivers, and we did see the increase when we made the switch, so we're very happy with it, and we are getting ready to switch the third truck, and I know I'm the holdup on that. I need to get some part numbers on thermostats and some other things. We've just been so busy, but I'm looking forward to converting that Mercedes over and tracking the results on that as well. And we're also getting great feedback here at Truck City Service with the conversions we've done.
Well, that's great. I want to add the fact that we put in higher temperature engine thermostats as well to help us get our fuel economy. And
yes.
We have ideas on where the fuel economy might come from by doing that, but you know, I don't know that any of our ideas would stand the scientific test as far as where the reasons are. All we know is that when we do it, we get fuel economy. We did an SAE Type 2 test with Auburn University down in Alabama last year, and they had test trucks for us to work with. Our test truck was a Detroit Diesel Series 60. We put in the high temperature thermostats that actuate at 215 F in order to isolate other effects. We removed the fan from being in consideration by locking the fan on 100% of the time, and also the control truck's fan was locked on 100% of the time. And we did this very rigorous SAE Type 2 test, and we picked up 3% fuel economy by using the high-temperature thermostats. And we're not, you know, that is a magnitude that can't really be explained in any one place as far as we're concerned. You know, you can say, okay, your cylinder walls are a little bit warmer, so maybe your motoring friction is less, or maybe you're not quenching the flame. Nobody I know has come up with the calculations that come up with a 3% fuel saving by doing that. We have done it. We have seen it. We believe it happens. And we see it in other trucks where we have done that similar kind of an installation.
Exactly. So I'm looking at the clock and I'm looking at the calls and the hands are going up. So what do you say we take some calls?
Okay.
Let's do that. Let's start off in Savannah. Hugh, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. Good evening, Tom.
The
question has been raised several times in forums and on some of Kevin's shows about the effect of doing this conversion, raising the temperature, changing the fan on temperature, raising the thermostat, what effect that might have on an APU that is tied into the cooling system of the truck. Has any research or study been done on that?
Okay, we are getting questions about the effect on the APU. There may be an effect. Apparently, some of these APUs have their own shutoff temperatures that may conflict with our temperatures. I have not researched it enough to really verify that. I don't know if there is an automatic shutdown temperature. Is that a temperature switch? You know, like a mechanical thermostat that says, "Oh, you've reached a point, click," or is there a thermistor type coolant temperature sensor that would act in this system? Probably it would be the former, since that would be a less expensive way to go. If there is interference with an APU, and you know, generally I don't believe you'd be running the APU when you are stressing the engine on a hard run, and you're. You might want to run the APU if you lost your generator and it was providing the power for your truck. Now, there may be certain times when you would want to be running the engine and the APU at the same time. And it may turn out, you know, that we will be working with APU manufacturers and figure out what their needs are, and they'll be figuring out what our needs are. And it may be that if we have to drop our temperature a little bit to cooperate with the APU, you know, that can be done. But we don't want to drop it very far. or we'll be giving up our fuel economy.
But you don't know of any situation where just having the higher temperature coolant running through the APU, even when it's not operating, which, you know, in my case, my APU doesn't operate unless I'm parked with my engine turned off. But you don't know of any risk of damage for running the higher temperature coolant through the APU, even, you know, when it's not running. I mean, are there seals or parts in that APU that may be?
I do not believe that you could harm your APU by circulating the higher temperature coolant through it. You know, you have shutdown devices, you have alarm devices that tell you when something is wrong. And if you're running a conventional water-based coolant and you exceed a certain threshold, there's something wrong. And so you have all kinds of warnings and shutdowns, derating and so on, that respond to those conventional places where normally there would be something wrong. And in the APU, okay, they're going to put something on their unit, and they're going to follow where all the other devices actuate. So it is not that anything bad is happening to the APU. It's merely that they're going to turn the APU off if they think there's some other problem in the system.
So this may be something that we would want to look at on a case-by-case basis. When we're doing a conversion and there's an APU in the loop, we would just want to look at that each time and make a decision on how this should be handled.
Well, actually, if you're only using the APU when your engine is turned off, I don't see any problem at all with
right.
any of the
right.
APUs.
Right.
It's only possibly, you know, if you're needing to use the APU while the engine's running and you are in a stress situation and your temperature's up there and the APU turns itself off and then you don't have any electricity. You know, that's really the only situation that we would really need
yeah.
to address. I don't think
that would that seems pretty rare. Hey Tom, I've got some more calls that I want to get
yeah.
to, and I'm looking at the
yeah.
clock. I know we're going to run out of time. So before we do, because we're not going to get to all the questions, and I know we have other people listening who are going to have questions, is there another number where if somebody wants to talk about the product or if they have other questions that they can call?
Well, they can call me during the daytime.
Okay.
I don't know, I'm a little bit shy here about giving my number, but...
Well, is there a different number that you'd rather give out, or...?
we have a diesel office that handles all kinds of questions from people, and they can refer questions to me.
Why don't we do it that way, then?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, why don't we do it that way?
Our marketing office in Suffield, Connecticut is probably the best place to call, and that would be 860-668-1114.
Okay, excellent. I'm going to get to another call here. That number again, if you have any questions and we don't get to them tonight, 860-668-1114. Let's head to Montana this time. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hello there. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Kevin and Robert did a conversion for me a couple months ago. I've been real happy with it. I'm getting about 5% better fuel economy. And the testing you were describing there with turning the fan all the time, seems to me that wasn't a real fair test, because I think that's where a lot of the economy is, and that might account for the extra 2%, you know, not running the fan. And I've done some aerodynamic things that increase the pressure in front of the radiator and decrease the turbulence underneath the hood, and between that and the Evans coolant, I really have to be pulling a pretty steep hill for the fan even to turn on, and I've been really happy with it. So.
Excellent.
Is your truck? What's your engine?
I got a 60 series Detroit DVAC 4. I got one question, though. The oil temperature, does that go through the resistor pack, or is that the actual oil temperature?
I'm sure that it's the actual oil temperature. We're not affected by the resistor pack.
Oh, okay. Because, well, today I was doing a pretty hard pull and was construction zone, so I decided to pull off, let the cars go around me, and I started off again, which, you know, I never stop or I never even back off anymore. Climbing a hill and, you know, oil temperature, the engine warning light went on, it was 240 and then 241, you know. I mean, it didn't derate or anything, you know, and if that's the actual temperature, that's really not that big a deal, you know. So
right.
That was my question. I really don't run that abnormal, any really abnormal oil temperatures. The first time it even got that high. So, all right, that was my question. So,
excellent. Well, great to hear back from you as well.
Yeah, I appreciate your product there. I'm always into innovative things. So.
Well, we want you to be able to pay back what you spent on the system, and then pocket the rest yourself.
There we go. And know that we're protecting things better. So, I go back to that. We're always looking for fuel economy, but I love it when I find products that have multiple benefits like that. Let's go to Minnesota. Matt, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Kevin.
Hey there.
You're talking about the efficiency of cooling, the hotter the temperature.
Yeah.
I have a great way to explain that. I've done used to do a lot of work with coal power plants.
Okay.
And we helped build a new cooling tower. And if you've ever been anywhere near it, you know, I mean, these things are huge. I mean, thousands of gallons of water per minute that they're running through these coolers. And new laws, you know, they get more and more strict every year. And we had to add one on to a power plant that repowered. And the new laws are they have to cool the water to the same temperature they pull it out of the river at. You know, it used to be they could have a 10-degree variance.
Okay.
And in the summertime, when it's, you know, 80, 90, 100 degrees outside, and up here in Minnesota, the water temperature in the river is only about 70. It's almost impossible to get that water back down to 70 degrees when the ambient air temperature is, you know, 80, 90, 100 degrees outside.
Okay.
So, I mean, that right there, you can understand how the hotter your coolant is, the easier it is to drop back down.
Right. It, with the differential, again, is where it comes in. Okay. Yeah, that was one of the concepts I was having the hardest time with, and now it's starting to make sense.
Yeah. And as far as APU is, I know with the TriPack, they are 220 degrees is their shutoff sensor, and I believe it's 140 on the thermostat, but they told me directly at Thermo King that they don't see how it would ever be a problem because you're running it through so much hose, by the time it gets back there, it's already cooled down a little bit, and, you know, I mean, it's... The only suggestion they had was running synthetic oil in your APU.
Yeah, well, I agree with them on that. I don't know why you wouldn't.
Yeah, that's, you know, running higher temperatures, they just suggested synthetic, so.
Got it. That makes sense. And again, I'm not sure why you wouldn't anyway. Such a small amount, and synthetic, in my opinion, such a superior product when it comes to that anyway. Let's try to squeeze one more and let's go to Utah. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How you doing tonight?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, when we're talking about the heat transfer, the best way to figure out the delta T on things is just imagine yourself outside in 110-degree weather and walking into a house at 70 degrees. versus walking into a freezer that's minus 20. You're going to cool off a lot faster in the minus 20 freezer than you are the 70-degree house, correct?
Yeah, I guess what I would say, that makes more sense when the cooling temperature that we're using was colder. I guess what I, and now it makes more sense that when we start at a higher temperature but and we still have that bigger differential, why it becomes more efficient. Now that makes sense. I kept looking at this higher temperature only, saying, how can it become more efficient just because it gets hotter? Well, it's not. It's the differential, and that makes sense to me now.
Well, you know, like your AC works a lot better when it's cooler outside than it's hot, because the condenser has to expand, you know, dissipate the heat in order to take the heat out of the truck. So the cooler it is outside, the more heat leaves the condenser. Therefore, it takes more heat out of the truck, so your air conditioning works properly.
Yeah, I'm glad we did this tonight, because now I learned something, which is, you know, that's my goal every day, to learn something new. I learned something that was bugging me before, so I'm glad we did this.
And I had a question for Tom there.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Hey, Tom, is there any way that you guys could get together with one of the gauge manufacturers, or maybe one of, you know, anybody, to get a gauge with your name on it that actually exceeds 250 degrees? Because, you know, all our gauges, when they're running 218, it's almost in the red already on 99% of trucks. So we need a gauge with this system that gives us a little bit of flexibility so we can actually pay attention to it. You know what I mean?
Mark, I think that's a great idea. I think
yeah, it is.
Guys in the business of making gauges maybe figure that out. But, you know, when we put a resistor pack on a sensor that is feeding the ECM, the ECM thinks the coolant is cooler than it really is. And if the gauge is driven by that ECM, that gauge is going to read about 20 degrees or so cooler than the coolant really is. So
Right. That's what I assumed. That's why I figure we need some other way to judge what that coolant is, because I'm definitely going to do this. Because according to Cummins, my N14 at 1,700 RPM draws 75 horsepower. My
75. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I was a little on the conservative side.
Well, you know, you feel it when you're going up a hill. It's like somebody just derates the engine as soon as the fan comes on. I mean, it's a terrible horsepower draw. And I really don't think the cooling, if, you know, when the fan kicks on, drawing 75 more horsepower, I don't think the fan's doing 30% of what it should pull in a hill, because it's adding so much more burden to the engine.
Well, when we need it most, when we need the horsepower most, and we're putting the engine under the maximum amount of stress, and it's getting hot, then this fan kicks on, pulls 75 horsepower, and you're right, now the engine has to work harder than it was before, so we're fighting against ourselves.
And inevitably, when the fan comes on, it's borderline getting hot anyway. So you're
right.
Usually hitting that right at the top of the hill. So you have, like, you know, half a mile to go, and it's just, that just adds that much more to that last little bit of pull, which will put you in the red light, you know, saying, you know, coolant temperature, shut it off, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Tom, we blew right through the hour here, and I want to get you back and do this again, because I know I can talk about it more. I have more questions. We have more questions on hold. But I want to thank you for joining us tonight. The number to call if you have more questions, 860-668-1114. You can also call here at Truck City Service for the conversions. And, Tom, thanks for joining us, and thanks for all the great information.
It was a lot of fun and a great pleasure to be with you tonight.
And you guys are going to be with us in Dallas, correct?
We're going to have some guys there, yes. I have a conflict. I won't personally be there, but we're going to have our people there.
Outstanding. So, we will also, Mike Tourville from the company is going to be on with us tomorrow night on the show, which is kind of a preview of Dallas, of what's going on at GATS, all the vendors, all the products that are going to be around us. We can talk about it again tomorrow night. We're all out of time. Tom, thanks again. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we will see you back here tomorrow night, and we'll see you in 30 minutes on the live show on Sirius and XM. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.